Christmas is a birthday celebrated for that baby boy. Born Christmas Day.
Listen to Johnny Woodlock. Well, you're in luck, Mr. Potter, because Johnny Woodlock is presenting his Way Back Country Christmas show every Sunday. Where can I hear that? On CFRC 101.9 every Sunday. It's a Wonderful Life.
Now, friends, we're back here on the Way Back Country Morning Show in Jamboree, as well as Way Back Country Christmas for 2024, our second Christmas program here at the Way Back Country Jamboree, which is now in its eighth year of Christmas programming at this time of year. We are also coming to you via the Woodlock Ranch and Studios in Cornwall, Ontario, and can also be heard proudly over historic CFRC 119 FM from the heart of downtown Kingston, Ontario, Limestone City of Canada. We can also be heard via www.cfrc.ca, where we can be found worldwide, and also where you can find out more about donating to our annual funding drive for the year of 2024, which we are in the middle of until the end of December. With that, it's my hope that my listeners will help this station into the future, and also the Way Back Country Jamboree continue on our station. With that, let's pay tribute to the second hour here this morning with a couple of classics as we celebrate the music and the career of Burl Ives, but also the music and the memories of our childhood. Let's remember two very special songs associated with the Rankin Bass Christmas specials from years gone by. First will be Jimmy Durante, the Great Snozzola, as he was always known as, and he often is remembered today as the narrator of the old Frosty Snowman program. Then we'll hear from legendary Fred Astaire and an all-time Christmas classic titled Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Now, Fred Astaire also narrated the Christmas classic that Rankin Bass did many years ago titled Santa Claus Coming to Town as the mailman, or also known as S.D. Krueger. With that, I would like to say good morning to all my listeners out there listening in to the second annual tribute to Christmas. Welcome in, friends.
Happy birthday!
Frosty the Snowman was a jolly happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal.
Frosty the Snowman is a fairy tale, they say. He was made of snow, but the children know how he came to life one day.
There must have been some magic in that old silk hat they found. Oh, when they placed it on his head, he began to dance around.
Frosty the Snowman was alive as he could be, and the children say he could laugh and play just the same as you and me. Frosty the Snowman knew the sun was hot that day, so he said, let's run and we'll have some fun now before I melt away.
Down to the village with a broomstick in his hand, running here and there all around the square, saying, catch me if you can. Look at that frosty go.
Thumpity, thump, thump, thumpity, thump, thump.
Over the hills of snow. Frosty the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal.
Frosty the Snowman had to hurry on his way,
but he waved goodbye saying, don't you cry.
cry. I'll be back on Christmas Day.
Hey, it's getting late, and I've got these letters to deliver. And you better be getting home, too. And remember, behave yourselves, because Santa can still look into his magic snowball and see just what you're up to. And now that you know all about him, you can be darn sure that come snow or high water,
Santa Claus is coming to town. You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice. He's gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Head dolls, the toggle and coo, elephants, boats, and kitty cars too. Santa Claus is coming to town.
The kids in girl and boy land will have a jubilee. They're gonna build a toyland town all around the Christmas tree.
So you better watch out, you better not cry. Santa Claus is coming. Santa
Claus is coming.
Santa Claus is coming.
Well, yes, friends, following those opening songs to the second hour of the Wayback Country Jamboree, where we are back on the Wayback Country Christmas program this morning. I would like to welcome a Wayback Country Jamboree special guest of honor to our program this morning, as we honor a very special friend that I have known since 2009, when I first reached out to him about the now late great Arthur Rankin Jr., who I had long admired. With that, it brings me great honor to welcome Rick Goldsmith to our program in this second half part of this special Christmas visit with Rick. Now, following this interview with Rick, we will hear an all-time classic signature song version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, as it appeared on the original Christmas classic Rudolph from 1964. It just turned 60 years old this week, and of course is recorded by the legendary Mr. Burrow Eyes. With that, here's our good friend Rick Goldsmith, and also historian to the Rankin Bass Christmas Collection. Welcome in, friends. Now, here's Rick.
Now, what are your thoughts on, after 60 years, of coming back to NBC?
Well, I liked NBC when it first aired.
Yes.
You know, they showed it right, and they did, they had the Rankin Bass commercials for GE, and it was a total sponsorship. There were no other commercials during Rudolph. It was all General Electric.
Okay.
So, historically, it's great that it'll be going back over to NBC, but I don't watch the networks anymore.
No.
And I haven't for years.
Yes, for sure.
They don't have anything that that I would want to watch anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's as big of a deal as it used to be.
I see.
Yeah, now it's streaming and home video. You know, you can buy it on 4K Blu-ray.
You don't even need stream, as you say. Yes. Yeah.
But it's nice that it's going back to NBC, because that brings attention to it. This year, I heard from a producer from CBS Saturday Morning, and he wanted to do a piece on Rudolph and Frosty and the whole Rankin Bass thing with me.
Yes.
But then he found out while we were talking that Rudolph and Frosty are moving off of CBS and going to NBC, and that kind of killed the whole thing.
Killed the whole operation, but, I see, yes.
Yeah, but I think they should still do it, because Rankin Bass, no matter what network they're on, they're iconic, especially Christmas television specials.
That's
that
true.
So many people identify with them and love them that, you know, CBS could air a nice piece on Rankin Bass and it wouldn't really matter.
Wouldn't matter as long as it's done properly, yes, for sure.
Right. So hopefully they'll still do something.
Yes. Now tell us about Burl Ives and Rudolph. I understand that he was brought in last.
Yeah, Bill Giles, who was the sound engineer, had recorded the entire soundtrack with Larry Mann as the voice of Sam.
And for those wondering,
he
was
the voice of Yukon.
Yes.
And he had a really good animatable voice, so I'm sure Sam sounded good.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have still been a great special, but towards the end, NBC or General Electric decided we need to get a star to tell the story of Rudolph, and they picked the right star.
Exactly.
Because he looked like a snowman, and he had such a warm, kindly voice, and he could sing. And Holly Jolly Christmas became a pretty big hit for Burl Ives.
Burl, yes, for sure.
He did the recording for the show, and then he also went into Nashville and recorded with Owen Bradley and put out his hit version of the song. So it really meant a lot to Burl Ives. And in later years, when he wrote the foreword for my first book, and I knew his widow really, really well, Dorothy.
Yes.
He was only known for Sam the Snowman.
Is that right?
A lot of people from later generations never saw him in the movies
or heard his music.
Knew that he was a singer or, you know, they just identified him as Sam the Snowman. So it was a really important role for him.
For sure. So looking back at the lasting impact that Rudolph has had, of course, this being the 60th, what has kept it going for so long, in your opinion?
Well, the writing is first and foremost by Romeo Muller.
Yes.
He wrote it in such a way that it's like a Wizard of Oz. It has the Misfit Island and it has these underdog characters that triumph in the end, you know? And that was a successful script remedy for Rankin Bass. And Arthur and Jules were involved with the script, so they made changes and came up with their own ideas. So it wasn't entirely Romeo, but Romeo had a lot to do with the longevity of it. And I think the simplicity of the design of the characters by Tony Peters really makes it such an iconic special. Because what drew me into the specials was the designs. And if I, you know, as an artist, if I didn't like the designs, I wouldn't like the show.
Exactly.
And they were so simple. They really have a 1960s Christmas feel to it. And I love that. You know, I love all the old decorations.
They're nostalgic.
The glass ornaments and, all the traditional 60s in particular Christmas designs.
Yes.
And his elves and Santa and the castle and the whole thing, the trees, they had that look. You know, even the opening credits with the packages, mm-hmm. and the lettering style that Tony Peters came up with, that is iconic. And that's why I think, you know, it's become a tradition to watch Rudolph, along with putting up the Christmas tree and decorating the house.
For sure,
it's an important part of the holidays now.
Exactly. So, tell us about your books that you have out, and where they can go about buying them.
Well, I sell it on Etsy, eBay, Amazon, and I even sell it direct. And it's the Year Without a Santa Claus and 'Twas the Night Before Christmas 50th anniversary scrapbook. So it's loaded with art and images and even memorabilia and collectibles from both of those specials. And then I also have sections on Rudolph and Frosty and Mad Monster Party, some updates on a lot of things that I found recently. And one of the things is we found a photograph of the display that NBC put up in 1964 of the Rudolph puppets. And amazing. That display remained there until 1971, and then CBS took over in 72.
Yes.
So the puppets came down. But the puppets, I needed to see this photograph because it shows the puppets that they used in all the publicity photos.
Yes.
And they also used them for, like, the record album sleeves.
Okay, yes, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So they were not the puppets that were used in the animation. And
like
I was talking
thought.
About that.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was talking about that before I found this photo, because I knew that Santa in the special looked more like the one that was in Japan in the Tad Moshinaga exhibit they had a few years ago.
Okay.
So.
Yes.
So you could see in my photograph in the book that Santa was sitting. He didn't have legs. He didn't have posable legs, because they took him and they put him on a set and they ran wires up his legs, rods.
Yes.
So they could pose him.
And to make him
move.
And
that was all that Santa functioned for.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't one of those puppets that they could move across the floor with bendable jointed legs. And this photograph confirms that, and it confirms what I've been saying. You know, the ones, the Rudolph and Santa that got auctioned off for $368,000,
yes.
And now they're in the Center for Puppetry Arts in Atlanta. They were made by the same puppet makers, but they weren't used in the actual animation, and they shouldn't say that they were.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's kind of deceiving, really. Yes.
Yeah, but I didn't know that until recent years, so I couldn't tell anybody that until the last few years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I have one last question for you today, Rick, and that is, how will you be spending Christmas this year?
Well, it's going to be a quiet Christmas for me, because with all the mailing and the busy season that it is for me, as far as orders go,
mm-hmm.
I'm setting up an exhibit at the Orland Park Public Library again in November, and then in December I'm going to Des Plaines, Illinois, to do a presentation in their library theater, And I don't know if you're familiar with Des Plaines, Illinois, but that was the home of the very first Ray Kroc McDonald's. And unfortunately, the McDonald's Corporation took down his original McDonald's, which was really dumb. But, you know, I just watched the movie The Founder with Michael Keaton.
Yes.
And they talk about that Ray Kroc Museum. He plays Ray Kroc. And he said that that was his number one store on Lee Road or Lee Street.
Okay.
And that's where I'm going to be.
Amazing.
A mile away from where the original Ray Kroc McDonald's stood.
Amazing.
I didn't set up too many appearances because with the new book, I knew it was going to be really busy for me on the mailing part. So
yeah,
I like to take it easy to try to enjoy Christmas and Thanksgiving and New Year's.
Exactly. Yes, for sure. Well, with that, Rick, we'll hope to do it again next year, and we'll wish you a very Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Yes, Merry Christmas.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee, Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shining nose, and if you ever would even say it goes.
All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games.
Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say,
Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee, Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.
You'll go down in history.
Yes, friends, I do hope y'all enjoyed that visit with our dear friend and Christmas guest of honor, Rick Goldsmith. Now, as we welcome y'all back here at On to the Wayback Country Christmas for 2024, it is once again time to pay tribute to what I like to call great Canadian Northern gems by even greater Canadian Northern legends. With that shared, I would like to remember a collection of great favorites from Canadian icons of country music. So let's begin with the legendary Smiley Bates in a classic called Daddy's Drinking Up Our Christmas. Then we'll follow with another all-time classic by Canada's country traveling man, Tommy Hunter, and he has an old version of Old Christmas Card that was also and will always be remembered as a Jim Reeves classic. Then we'll wrap up with the true lady of the East Coast of Canada and the pride of Big Pond, Nova Scotia, Miss Rita McNeil, and a classic called Christmas at Home. With that, I would like to say good morning to everybody listening in and also wish y'all a very merry Canadian country Christmas. Welcome in, friends.
Gentle snow came drifting down that falls on Skid Row too. And on the curb there sat a child, his little cheeks turned blue. the neon across the way looked up and said to me, Daddy's drinking up our Christmas in that bar across the street. In that bar across the street, there's a woman Daddy knows. And every time it's payday night, that's right where Daddy goes. I left my mommy crying, she'll cry herself to sleep. Daddy's drinking up our Christmas in that bar across the street. I stood there on the corner, a sick man down inside. You see, I'd just been headed to that bar the child described. But here's one foolish father, that honky tonks won't be. It could have been my son who spoke those words upon the street. In that bar across the street, there's a woman Daddy knows. And every time it's payday night, that's right where Daddy goes. I left my mommy crying, she'll cry herself to sleep. Daddy's drinking up our Christmas in that bar across the street.
There's an old Christmas card in an old dusty trunk, and it brings by the sweet memories dear to me. Though it's faded and worn, it's as precious as the morn when I found it 'neath our first Christmas tree. I thrill with every word, every line. Guess I'm always sentimental around this time. Pardon me if a tear falls among my Christmas cheer. It's a memory of an old Christmas card. You know, I can't help feeling sentimental around this time of year, because every time I see a Christmas card, it reminds me of our first Christmas together. What a beautiful card you gave me that year. Why, you must have looked for hours to find that very special one. And when I look at that card, it can still bring a tear to my eye. I thrill with every word, every line. Yes, I'm always sentimental around this time. Pardon me if a tear falls among my Christmas cheer. It's a memory of an old Christmas card. Thank you.
on the Christmas party in the fall and the snow. Exchanging gifts, exchanging smiles, hanging pine cones in the hall. Merry Christmas, better lots of whispering, special feelings to bridge the difference. All the years we came together for Christmas.
Now, friends, it's once again that time in the program to welcome a very special guest of honor onto the Wayback Country Jamboree. This is our second guest of honor for this second tribute to Christmas for 2024. As I welcome a very special member of Hollywood's royal family, her father was the King of Halloween, having become the Frankenstein monster back in the 1930s for a Universal monster movie, Frankenstein. However, back in 1966, Boris Karloff would lend his distinctive voice to the now forever classic, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. With that, becoming an immortal Christmas classic, I'd like to welcome the next guest, who is also the beloved daughter of none other than Boris Karloff, to our program this morning, Miss Sarah Karloff. This will be the first part of a two-part interview with Miss Karloff. Following this visit, we will hear an all-time classic associated with the Christmas season, but was also a monster classic titled It's a Monster's Holiday and was recorded by Bobby Boris Pickett. With that, here now is Miss Sarah Karloff.
Thank you. Hi, Johnny.
Well, it's a pleasure to be talking to you, Sarah. I'm sorry about trying to get a hold of you back in, for Halloween, but at least we're together now.
Yeah, that'll be fun today.
Exactly. So let's go back and to where your father was born and raised. I understand he was an English person.
He was. He was born in Dulwich, England, and just outside of London in 1887.
Yes, yes. And how did he come to Canada? I understand he went to Canada before he went to Hollywood.
Oh, yes. When he was 21, he was trained for the diplomatic service in Great Britain. He was the youngest of 9 children. And all of his brothers, there was one sister and 7 brothers, and then my father. And he was the youngest of 9, and they were all schooled for the consular service in Great Britain, and including my father. But he was not interested in that at all, and he was interested only in becoming an actor. Although he had no acting lessons whatsoever, acting experience, he'd seen a lot of plays.
Okay.
And so he flipped a coin between Canada and Australia.
Oh, wow.
Shows you how much he knew about the acting business. And Canada won, and British Columbia won, and he boarded a ship without any money whatsoever, other than he had £100. And he took a ship over to British Columbia. He thought he had a job with a farmer. The farmer had never heard of him. And however, the farmer was nice enough to employ him and let him sleep in the barn.
Yes.
And he worked for the farmer until he got an opportunity to audition with a repertory theater group, and he was hired because he said he was an experienced British actor and had come over to Great Britain to explore the new world and to take up his career.
Okay.
And
okay.
And his salary was $30 a week when he first stepped foot on a stage, but it was $15 a week when he stepped off the stage because it was abundantly clear he'd never set foot on a stage before.
I see.
But at least he still had a job.
Exactly, that's for sure, yes. Now, also, one of his earliest things that he ever did was Captain Hook.
Oh, no, that wasn't early. That was in the 1950s.
Oh, was it? Okay, okay.
On Broadway.
Okay.
That was when he was, that's when he starred on Broadway. He starred on Broadway eventually in 5 different plays, that being one of them, Peter Pan. But that was in the 1950s.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, we're talking about the 1920s when he came over to British Columbia.
Yes, for sure. So how did he make his way into, of course he will forever be remembered as Frankenstein's monster.
Well, that wasn't until the 1931. He spent 10 years in British Columbia in repertory theater learning his craft. He worked with 3 different repertory theater groups, and he learned his craft, and they did up to 5 different plays a week, and that's a lot of lines to learn.
Yeah.
And fortunately, he was a quick study, and but lots of times he was out of work, and he when he was working in the theater, they would paint sets, they'd build sets, they'd move sets, they'd do whatever was required of them in the repertory theater world. And then between jobs in the theater, he worked for the British Columbia Railroad. He drove trucks. He lifted cement bags. He did all sorts of things. And while he was waiting for the next play to come up for which he could possibly audition and hopefully be cast. And sometimes he'd be paid, sometimes he'd be not paid, sometimes he'd eat, sometimes he would have mulligatawny soup and have the broth one night and have the substantial part of the soup the next night. For 10 years he was in British Columbia before he made his way down to Chicago a couple of times and then eventually to San Francisco, where he was in a play, and then eventually he auditioned for something that took him down to Hollywood, but he really thought he was going down just to do theater work. He had no idea of being in the movies, but somebody told him about an audition for a film, and so he auditioned for it. And he got the role as a bit part player in the film, and that was his beginning in Hollywood as a movie actor.
For sure.
But that wasn't until he'd been in Hollywood almost 10 years before he was cast in Frankenstein's.
And I understand there was about 80 movies that he's made before Frankenstein as well.
That's right. Frankenstein was his 81st film.
Amazing.
And as he said, hardly anyone saw the first 80.
I see, yes. For sure. So how did he become Frankenstein's monster? I know he wasn't even... it was supposed to go to Bela Lugosi originally.
Well, it would have gone to Lon Chaney Sr.
Okay, yes.
But he unfortunately died early in his career, and then it was offered to Bela Lugosi, and Bela decided to turn it down because it was a non-speaking role and because there was so much makeup involved, and he didn't want to do it but for those two reasons in particular.
I see.
And then they'd already begun shooting the film before they had the monster cast. And my father was in the commissary, which is the cafeteria on a studio lot.
Yeah.
And he was in the commissary having a coffee, and James Whale, the new director for Frankenstein, asked him to come over and bring his coffee with him and sit down and talk about auditioning for a new film he was doing, and asked my father if he was interested in auditioning. And my father, at that point, being an extra or a big part player at that point, was interested in doing anything. And so he was coupled with Jack Pierce, who was just the head of the makeup department, but just a fabulous, fabulous makeup artist. And he worked with Jack for 2 weeks on the makeup, and then they shot a short bit of the film.
Okay.
And my father then was cast in the role, and Frankenstein was shot in 1931. So my father had been in the business for, at that point, if he counted his time in British Columbia, he'd been in the business 20 years.
20 years, when he was, yes.
Yeah. He was 44 years old by that time, and he'd come over from England when he was 21.
Okay, I see, yes, for sure. So he was it wasn't an overnight success then. He took his time.
No, yeah. He was an overnight success after 20 years in the business.
Exactly, yes. That's what I mean, yes.
It was the night before Christmas when all through the castle my monsters were having a yuletide hassle. The tree was all trimmed in ghoulish things like werewolf fangs and vampire wings.
It was a monster's holiday,
but they were up to no good.
It was a monster's holiday,
didn't act like good monsters should.
It was a monster's holiday,
they found themselves a new prey.
It was a monster's holiday.
They planned to rob Santa's sleigh. They were making a list and checking it twice. Frankenstein wanted a shiny new trike, a new chain for Janusz, a brace for Igor's back, a speed shaver for Wolfman, a new cape for Drac. They were up to no good. Didn't act like good monsters should. They'd found themselves a new prey. They planned to rob Santa's sleigh. The mummy was to signal from the castle roof at the very first sound of a reindeer hoof. As Santa slid down the chimney wall, the zombies were to make off with sleigh and all. From beyond the moat there arose such a clatter, I jumped to the window to see what was the matter. Like a bolt of lightning it happened so quick, and there in our midst stood old Saint Nick. He began to dig down deep in his sack and came up with the traction for Igor's back. Drac caught his cape, Frankie's trike made him behave. Even Wolfman was happy, now he can shave. And all ended well. And Santa was really swell. No need to rob Santa's sack. Maybe next year he'll come back. So the children everywhere were spared the grief of losing their presents to a monster sleigh thief. Now the monsters love Santa and say they'll behave and never again rob sleighs or graves. Igor, what do you think of Santa now? Santa Ghoul! What was that he said as he drove out of sight?
Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-wolf open sleigh. Well, dashing through the snow, where is that reindeer with the red nose? On Donner, on Blitzen, on Dancer and Vixen.
Now, friends, I do hope you all enjoyed that first part of our two-part interview with Sarah Karloff. Now, as I welcome you all back in this morning, it's once again time to share another all-time favorite from years gone by of a Canadian country music legend, and that is none other than Artie McLaren and a song taken off an old ARC record label, LP record, which came out many years ago and is called Country Christmas Volume 1. From this old LP record, it's going to be Artie McLaren and a song simply titled An Old Fashioned Christmas. I would also like to send this out to John up there in Guelph, Ontario, who greatly helped me get a hold of this song again. I hadn't had a good version of this for a while, and he's helped me with getting a hold of it. So with that, we'll send it out to John and Kathy up there in Guelph. With that, here's Artie McLaren.
I can see the holly in the window, decorations on the Christmas tree, stockings all hung by the fireplace, hung there with tenderness and glee. Soon old Santa will be coming. There'll be lots of presents neath the tree. Back home
for this old-fashioned Christmas. The whole family will make it complete. You know, this time of year rather affected me. When the snow covers the mountains, the valleys, and the trees, brings back fond memories of days of old, when I'd spend an old-fashioned Christmas with all of the folks back at home. There was my sister, my brothers, Billy and Roy, all so happy, their hearts so full of joy. So let me say to you, whether you be at home or far away, I hope you have an old-fashioned Christmas and a happy New Year's Day. Lots of presents neath the tree back home for this old-fashioned Christmas. The whole family will make it complete.
Yes, friends, I do hope y'all enjoyed that classic off the old ARC label, record label. Now, once again, we have reached the end of the second hour of the Way Back Country Christmas Favorites today. And as we send us into the third and final hour of this morning's program, the Way Back Country Christmas, I would like to play and remember again the gospel meaning of Christmas and the true meaning of Christmas, that is, of course, the birth of Jesus. Now, as we do this, let's play a collection of great Christmas favorites. First of all, it's going to be the legendary late great Red Sylvine and a classic called The Legend of the Christmas Rose. Then we'll follow with the First Lady of Canadian Country Music and also the Queen of Canadian Country Music, Miss Carol Baker, and her all-time classic called A Carpenter, A Mother, and a King. And I'll send us up into the very top of the 10 o'clock hour here this morning with none other than Burl Ives and a classic called I Heard the Bells on Christmas Morn. With that, I would like to wish everybody a very happy and safe Merry Christmas season out there in the listening area. And yes, I'll talk to y'all on the other side of the hour. Good morning, friends.
Merry Christmas, Red!
Merry Christmas, girls. Say, by the way, did you ever hear the story of how the Christmas rose came to be?
No.
There's a story I must tell you. Not too many know how it goes. It began upon first Christmas night. It's the legend of the Christmas rose. Well, it was a long, long time ago, and from the east there came three wise men, bearing gifts they had brought from afar. They had traveled for a long, long way with their guiding light, a brilliant star. And in the distance stood a little shepherd girl whose eyes were sad, for she had no gift to offer to the child. And as her tears fell to the ground, white roses started growing there. When she placed them by the babe in the manger, it seemed he smiled. As his fingers touched the petals, a pale shade of pink there appeared. Just at Christmas time, this flower grows. That's the legend of the Christmas rose.
The legend of the Christmas rose.
Merry Christmas.
carpenter, a mother, and a king. And in the lowly stable, a mother held her child. A gift of love was all she had to bring.
Because Johnny Woodlock is presenting his Way Back Country Christmas show.